Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people that are making a difference in the collective of our thought process and our species at this time on the planet. And tonight I have a very, very exciting fellow who's going to take us through some big changes in thought and consciousness. Welcome to the show, Solomon Faber.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
I'm really glad you're here, and you're a healer. I like what it says here, learning to navigate within your personal reality. So you're a captain of a ship, are you?
Yeah, where everybody's ever capsized.
And so, Solomon, you do some very interesting work. I've been working with Solomon. I stumbled over your work online, and it's been a very intriguing and different approach to how to handle enlightenment and awakening. And we talked about your history. Let's talk about your history. You've been on the spiritual path for a very long time, haven't you?
Yeah, since I've been about 18 years old.
And that's not very long ago, is it?
Well, I'm 57 now.
Oh, okay, so that's a while.
what is that, 30, 40 years?
Yeah, that's good.
40 years.
That's actually a short time on the path sometimes, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It feels like just yesterday.
Well, tell people how you, did you stumble onto the path, or did you already know deep down within yourself you're going to seek it, or what?
Well, I think it started way back. Remember when the Merv Griffin show was on, and transcendental meditation was really popular? I was sitting in my room feeling extremely depressed. My mother was concerned I was going to commit suicide, and I just needed something. And I was at that point where I said, hey, this is getting too hard here. I need help. And
when you say here, were you aware of, like, you know, other realms and so on?
I was aware that there was, like, I'd had lots of experiences where I was a little kid and would turn around, you know, in my yard and go around the house and peek around the corner. I would see the universe, you know, and had all these cosmic experiences of feeling like this wonder of the universe that when I would look out the window of my bus when I was going to school. I had all these, but my life was so horrible.
Oh, was it?
And I felt everybody and everything and all the things, I just couldn't stand it. It was really, really hard for me.
Hmm.
And I needed some help. And I went to this event for transcendental meditation. I remember I was 17 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about all this stuff of self-improvement and all these, you know, changing your brain waves and all that. And all of it sounded interesting. And then at the end of the event, after I was kind of bored, but I went, okay, I got to try this, you know, because I need some help. She goes, and these are the states of consciousness. And she went, and cosmic consciousness is when this happens. And there must have been about 150 people in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
It was very popular at the time. The Beatles were into it and all that stuff. And I just got up right in the middle of it, and I said, that's what I want.
Good for you.
And I went, who just got up? I was shocked. I didn't know who even got up out of the chair and said it.
Hmm.
And I sat down really quietly and went, oh, my God. I never did that at the time. I was so closed down.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I wanted that. I just heard about it. And that started my journey that day.
Hmm.
I was about 18 years old.
Wow. And then so you started doing TM?
Yes, I did. And mm-hmm. I remember I did it and went to a weekend event, you know, one of those workshops,
mm-hmm.
that weekend. And I had no idea what I was in store for. I was just spaced out of my gourd.
Mm-hmm.
I remember taking a tray of food and going down the line, you know, at the cafeteria. At the end of the bar, you know, where you slide your tray,
mm-hmm.
so my food just went on the floor. I couldn't even function, and I just looked around, and everything was light. You know, everything was like beautiful, and all this cosmic stuff, and I was like, and I couldn't function. And wow. People led me back to my seat. And I was just really out there.
And this is because of the consciousness. It was because of the consciousness of that workshop?
Yes, it was. Well, everybody was meditating, you know, and doing all that stuff, and it affected me.
Mm.
But later on, I found out it was just nonsense, you know, because all those experiences didn't matter. They had nothing to do with what I really wanted. They were just distractions to make me feel like I was getting somewhere. I was spiritual. I was like this. I was on the way, and I was having good experiences so I could report them to the teacher and show how much better I was than everybody else.
But wait a
That's
sec.
All it was
you
me.
Were telling us that you were feeling like offing yourself, that you didn't want to live. Wasn't this some kind of transcendence that gave you a sense of being more powerful or bigger or something?
Yes, right, exactly. Well, it gave me hope.
Mm.
It gave me a sense that at least I have these good feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I started feeling really good.
Oh, good.
But I wasn't happy. I was just feeling good, and then the next moment I'd be depressed. Or I would blame somebody, or I'd complain about something, or I'd hit a wall somewhere inside myself.
Hmm.
And even though the experiences were there, even though the perceptions were there of light and love and all this stuff, I didn't change.
Hmm.
My attitude was still negative, still I felt really mean inside, still had all the thoughts that I wanted people to leave me alone, go away. All the things that everybody has at times, even now. And I went, this is not what's going on. And I stayed with it for about 3-4 years because I didn't know anything else.
But did you stay doing TM?
3-4 years doing it.
Oh, I thought you meant you stayed with the mean feelings and the inner. And.
Oh, no, those were there for about 20 years.
Oh, 20 years.
For a long time, for at least 20, 30 years after that.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you stayed with the TM for 4 years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it showed me a lot. It showed me a lot. Because I had to live at this this place where there was a lot of people. It was Institute for Creative Intelligence, I think.
Oh.
And there was like 600 or 700 people there.
Is that a TM institute?
Yeah. Hmm. And I was just fighting with everybody and I gave up my life. I gave up, you know, I went to school. I got a degree, you know, early because I was really smart. But it didn't do any good.
What kind of a degree did you get?
It was a heating, it was an engineering degree.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was like this partial genius.
Hmm.
But I used so many drugs at the time that it all went away. But that's what people have to go through to realize things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my period of the first state of consciousness for me.
Okay.
Which was disillusionment.
Okay.
The place of dissatisfaction. Realizing that nothing worked. And that was very good to do. And it took about 10 to 15 years of being there. And I did everything. I did Reiki. I did EFT. I was a disciple of Osho for a while.
Hmm.
I did Muktananda's work.
Hmm.
I hung out with Baron Katie. I did every little New Age thing.
Mm-hmm.
Balanced chakras, did healing, did events on self-improvement, diet, even Tantra and cosmic dance. I did everything. I did. I was teaching classes as well as did it myself. And so that was the time of self-improvement. Realized that didn't work either. I was just going back in circles. But I didn't see myself. I didn't know who I was. It was like I had good feelings. People idolized me and respected me and put me on a pedestal and I got everything I thought I wanted. I had money. You know, I was making a lot of money.
Hmm.
And none of it mattered to me. None of it satisfied me. Like, no matter how good my experience got, no matter how deep my meditations got, no matter how intimate I felt with people and felt like people were, like, in high states being with me. Like, I'd walk into a room and I'd do an event and people would go, oh, this feels so good, thank you. And afterwards I'd go, this is all a sham. I'm just a complete charlatan. I'm a complete fake. There's nothing I'm saying here that makes any sense at all.
You mean because you didn't integrate it, or you didn't feel like what you were preaching you were able to do?
I wasn't living what I was preaching. Mm. And not only that, I wasn't living in a state where I wasn't reactive to anything.
Mm.
I was reactive to everybody. I still blamed people. I complained. I whined about the way things were. I was still needing, chakra balancing to keep myself stable. You know, I was still feeling like I'd go on these highs and get puffed up and important. But nothing worked. And this is the state of disillusionment. This is the state of where you realize that you really don't know what's going on.
Hmm.
And I felt defeated.
Hmm.
And that's real important for people to come to. If a person hasn't gotten to the place where they feel defeated and that no techniques, no games, no nothing, no sex, no relationships, nothing works, when you know this, you start your spiritual journey. Until then, you're in a cosmic merry-go-round.
Hmm.
You're just spinning your wheels, thinking that you're going somewhere and getting spiritual. The place of defeat happened for me, where I became so depressed, I didn't want anything to do with anybody. I didn't want any events. I never wanted to talk about spirituality or meditation or mantras or high states of consciousness at all. I didn't want relationships. I didn't want sex. I didn't want anything. I felt like everything I was doing was a waste of time, and I didn't know what to do because every teacher I would listen to wouldn't make any sense to me.
Hmm.
And a lot of it was because I wasn't really listening. Like the two teachers, you know, like an Adyashanti or a Byron Katie, they would speak, but I would hear what they're saying with these filtered ears,
hmm.
with these filtered eyes. So I didn't really know what they were saying because I was coming from beliefs and concepts of what I thought was the truth.
Hmm. I mean, you were kind of comparing everything they said to what was already in your head, sort of thing?
Exactly, because I thought I knew something.
Mm-hmm.
And after that defeat came, I during that time of defeat, which was for a number of years, I had many nervous breakdowns, a lot of feeling like I didn't want to be here,
mm-hmm.
because there was nothing for me here that I could see that made me happy. Became very cynical. And then something popped in me, and I'd realized that I didn't really know what was going on. And that was the start of opening my eyes. It's like Eckhart Tolle talks about this, like not knowing. It's extremely important to get to that place to start the journey where you don't know, and then you just have an empty cup. And then you can receive what people are saying to you. But if you already think you know what's going on, then forget it. You're just going to filter it through your beliefs and concepts.
Hmm.
But if you don't know what's going on, then you sit there dumbstruck like a baby. People say whatever they say to you, and you listen to it like it's the first time.
Hmm.
And that's the place I had to enter. I had to gain a little bit, even just a tiny speck of humility. And for me, that was a miracle at that time because I was so arrogant. I thought, I'm Mr. Cosmic. This is Solomon, the cosmic man. And I really thought that I was really more conscious than everybody else. And that's when I realized there was no such thing as being more conscious than anybody else. I didn't even know what it meant. I didn't even know what any of this spiritual stuff meant. And the more I sat there with that I didn't know, the more I realized that my whole past was just about letting go to the point where I was there. And I started to be really grateful for my disillusionment, for my not knowing, for my dumbness, for my naivety. Did I say that word right? Naivete.
Naivete.
I didn't know. Anybody could pull anything over me. But I was still reactive, still angry. I was still crazy, completely crazy. What people call sane, but for me it was crazy. And so when that defeat happened, when I didn't know, the next state of consciousness after defeat was the most important at that time for about a 5-year period. It was the state of help. I needed help. And before that, I was so prideful that I would never ask for help because I thought I could do it alone. You know those people who go off and they go, I'm just going to do this myself. I don't need a teacher. I don't need a guide. Mm-hmm. I don't need any help. I can just do this on my own.
Right.
And I was so arrogant, I thought I could. I'd read enough books. I'd listened to enough people. I was in enough spiritual groups. I had the information. Let's do it. Nothing moved. Nothing happened. I'd just spin my wheels. I'd get slicker. I'd feel better. I looked better. My aura got really big, like you said. It's like I looked the part, but inside I was still going through the same beliefs. And even though I'd opened my eyes a little bit, it's not until I asked for help that I really started to open my eyes. And every moment of every day was pleading with the divine or God or the Father or Jesus or whatever you want to call the divine. There's 1,000 names for it, the Atman, the Om, the Chi Center, whatever. I called it the divine. That's the word I like to use. And I had many, you know, cosmic guides, you know, like people do. I had Gabriel and Jesus and all these people I would talk to on the inside. And I had clear communication, too. Mm-hmm. I could hear them. But a lot of times they wouldn't even talk to me because I was so arrogant. I still think I knew stuff. And so I needed to be humbled a lot more. So a lot of times they wouldn't talk to me, and I'd have to look at things myself. But I had to ask for help anyways.
Okay.
It's like even though you don't get an answer, you just ask for help. Even though you don't get a result and a voice in your head, you ask for help. You become so desperate to connect with the divine that even if you don't get an answer, it doesn't matter. It's just the act of presenting yourself as a helpless human being that is the happiness itself. And I loved that place.
So it's a humility. It's a humbleness.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It's a losing while, you know, you feel like you're a loser. You feel like you're the scourge of the earth. You feel like nothing is working, and it's like it's the most depressing place you can find, but at least you're not thinking that you're hot stuff, so you're not puffed up. You don't feel important. You don't feel like, oh, here I am, I'm Mr. Cosmic. You crash, and you feel like the bottom of the earth, and that bottom, that place of losing, that surrender, that utter, unconditional disillusionment was my best friend. I still didn't have much of a home inside myself. Mm-hmm. Like I still was deep in duality. But at least I had the willingness to know that I didn't know what to do and that I was helpless. And so help turned into helplessness. And that's the next state. So it went from dissatisfaction and disillusionment to self-improvement, mm-hmm. To defeat, to help, and then to helplessness. That helplessness is an extremely advanced state for most people to really give up, to stop fighting, and to go, I'll trust you, Divine. Most clients that I work with, 90% of them, have not even started to trust the Divine to the point where they feel like the Divine is on their side.
Mm-hmm.
They still feel like they got a raw deal in their life. Somebody hurt them. Somebody has, you know, they're a victim. And a victim to the Divine if they're victims to others. There's no difference. If you feel like a victim to others, you feel like a victim to the Divine.
Well, I want to ask you this. Do you think in this way of thinking, divinity moves through us to create everything we represent on the planet? How does that work?
Divinity plays a game with us. It lets us feel like nothing works to the point where we become beggars. And then it just takes over. It's like a body snatcher. Literally, if you want to look at it in those terms, I mean, it sounds kind of creepy, but it just snatches your body. It just says, well, if you can't do this, then we're going to take over. And at first you go, well, hold on a moment. I have a personality. I have a self that has a voice here. I want a say in the matter. But after a while, you realize that your voice doesn't matter and that it's not even real. And that the act of help is the place where you just, the Divine just flows through you and starts to just take over your actions, what you say, what you think, what you feel. And the whole thing at that time was for me, was to see where I was saying that the Divine, where it wasn't, where I was saying this is off limits. Like, you can't take this away from me.
So there's no free will when you do it that way? You don't have free will, or do you?
None. Okay. There is no free will when you surrender.
Okay.
It's the opposite. Surrender is the state where free will is the thing you're letting go of. Free will is just the ego saying, I want things on my terms. The state of helplessness, of surrender, of losing, is where you give up having a say in the matter. You give up thinking that you have something that you should get. There are no shoulds instead of helplessness. If you feel like, well, the government should be good to me, my husband should say good things to me, you know, my girlfriend should treat me in this way, there is none of that in helplessness. There is only, where have I not been kind to you? What have I got to learn? Please teach me. Everybody becomes the teacher. Every single human being, from the garbage collector to the bum on the street, to you know, listening to spiritual teachers, they all have equally, and I say equally, and I'm not kidding, equally valid things to say to you. Equally. Nobody is more important or less important in a state of helplessness. You're on the bottom at everybody's feet, touching their feet, just like Mary Magdalene did with Jesus, saying, please help me to understand how I can hear you.
So the only expectation you can have is, do you have any expectations of help?
No, there is none.
Okay.
Because all of any expectation you have is the arrogance of thinking that you deserve something.
Hmm.
A state of surrender has no deserving. You don't get what you want in that state. But you get to a point where you realize what you want is not what you really need anyways. Like the Rolling Stones had in their song. Can't get what I need, so I'll get want, so I'll get what I need. It's the truth. You're not here to get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
like some people say, well, awakening is giving up all desire. In a way, it is. If that's true, then everything you desire, you want, goes, has to go. And this is just the state of helplessness. We haven't even gotten to the truly stable states yet. We're just in a state of where you're still suffering. You're still in duality. Mm-hmm. You're still completely insane. That telling that truth, you're in the state where you realize you've never loved a single moment in your life. You've never cared. You've never been kind. And you're sitting there going, please teach me. And you go up to the butcher and you go, please teach me how to live. It becomes that much of a surrender, of humility, where there's no more like, oh, I'm going to a spiritual group to learn from this spiritual teacher. Everything becomes a gift, an undeserved gift, not because you did something good, but because it's a gift. No matter how ugly it looks, no matter how beautiful it looks, all equally a gift. And you just start to say, thank you. And that's the next state. And thank you is a huge state. It has so many layers to it, just like help does to helplessness. Mm-hmm. Thank you has even more layers, because gratitude is endless. At first, you are only gratitude for your good feelings. Thank you for my washing machine that you gave me, or my car, or my girlfriend or boyfriend, or you know, my nice experiences during meditation. Those are cheap. That's not really gratitude. That's just kind of like being happy with your good experiences. Mm-hmm. In a state of true gratitude, you feel complaining and you go, thank you for my complaining. Teach me how to consciously complain. Show me how to be tender with every negative feeling I have. Show me how to forgive myself for where I am rather than where I should be. And gratitude becomes gratitude for everything that looks ugly. You look at Saddam Hussein and you just see your beloved. You look at your father or your mother and you see only your teacher, only your best friend. You get to a point where for 2 years, every morning for an hour, I sat with my parents' pictures on a small altar saying thank you to them for everything they gave me. And in my case, my childhood didn't look that good. I mean, both my parents were in Auschwitz during World War II, Dachau and Bergen-Belsen. They were concentration camps.
Wow.
So I had a horrendous childhood, and I was an only child. I was beaten up. I got hit, not every day, but almost every day, by my father, who was completely crazy from 5 years of putting people in ovens, live bodies. You know, you can imagine he would do that. But all I feel now is compassion, respect, and awe of him. He taught me so much. He taught me that control doesn't work. He taught me that rage and reactivity and anger doesn't work. Now, at the time when I was a kid, I didn't listen to him, didn't respect him, didn't acknowledge what he had to give me. But I do now. Now I think he's the Buddha.
Is he still living?
Oh, yeah.
Does he like what you're doing or how you are?
He doesn't even know.
Okay.
It's not my business to tell him. Mm-hmm. When I talk to it, I don't care if he knows. The only business my father has is allowing him to be right on the phone. He still wants to be right. He wants to be on top. He wants respect. It's, you know, what it's the parent's role. And I just give it to him. I surrender. Because he doesn't really understand what it is to open your eyes and wake up. And so to try to get him to see me is just me talking to myself, trying to get myself to see myself. So I don't play that game with him. Mm-hmm. I just celebrate him exactly where he is. And he's my best friend. He's crazy. he still feels really suffering and unhappy. But I don't see it that way. I see a man that has given me more than any human being this lifetime, other than my mother. So you have to come to that place of gratitude. There's no way around it. You can't not include your parents. Many of the layers of gratitude have to include your family, your siblings, the people who brought you up, that you made God when you were a child. If you don't include them, if you think you can go on this journey without including forgiveness of them, you're fooling yourself. It's complete denial. They are the crux, the center of forgiveness. Not therapy of them, but understanding that they are the source of all the joy that you can receive inside yourself. Mm. And that is quite a statement, but that's a very advanced state of thank you. Thank you is looking at, like, for instance, my mother was raped continuously by the Nazis. They were there between the ages of 13 and 18, and my mother was extremely beautiful. And when I was in the womb, her womb, it was pretty scary because she had dreams and thoughts of hatred and being hurt by the Nazis. And it wasn't until years later that I sat inside of that nightmare of her being raped, mm-hmm. and receiving how she felt, mm. being raped, and receiving how the Nazis felt, and how I felt as a child in her womb, receiving all those things and saying thank you, and realizing all that hate was just, the texture of it was very uncomfortable at first, and then treating it as my beloved. That hate was as close to me as love. Hmm. That they weren't better, or I didn't prefer one over the other. And that took me a while to keep feeling every day. And at first I just didn't want to face it. I ran. Hmm. I was like, I don't want hate in my life. But oneness is knowing that you are everything. Not cosmically experiencing it. That's just pseudo-enlightenment. But really knowing that you're everything. That you're hate. That you're all the suffering on the planet. That you're all the children have been hurt by George Bush and our government and myself, who've paid the taxes for it. That we're capable of pushing that button to destroy the world. You have to know you're everyone and everything. No matter, you're Jesus, you're Buddha, you're everybody beautiful and ugly. And to the point where there's no more judgment that says, oh, I'd rather be beautiful than ugly. You sit with ugliness and you go, thank you. So gratitude is huge. It's been made cheap, but it could take you the rest of this life, mm-hmm. just to learn thank you. After thank you is where everybody wants to go, and that's the state of please. That's where you go, please, I would like this, and you receive it. Please, I would like a relationship, and you receive it immediately. You get your car. You get everything you want. But you can't get to that place of please until you're saying thank you and you have everything in front of you, but you don't care because you're so in gratitude for what you have. To say please, I would like something different, you don't even care. You're not even interested in receiving anything else in your life because you're complete in what you have. You've said thank you, and so thank you for all the violence on the earth. Thank you for my life. Thank you for me being poor. Thank you for my loneliness. And so when you say please, you're saying it because it's fun. You say, please, I would like to have a relationship. But you know that maybe inside you don't even care. You're not even interested. You hope it doesn't even happen. It's like there's no place of completion inside yourself where you're going, this would be a good thing. There's none of that. It's gone. There's no self there that says, I need something more because I'm in lack. Lack is gone. You don't even pretend that lack is something that will be completed.
Well, so just let me ask you this. What is the self then?
The self is your best friend. It's the illusion inside you that pretends that it exists. It is the person, it's everything that you see. A lot of people pretend that when they have this experience of meditation where they go deep and there's this supreme like silence and feelings of peace and glory and everything, and they feel like this divine presence, and they go, that's myself, that's my true divinity. Mm-hmm. But that's the self too. That's the ego also. Everything that you perceive, no matter how beautiful it is the ego. And Maya, the ego, the conqueror of this ego, is very clever. She's brilliant. And she can fool you so easy. But everything is the self. No matter how majestic it is, no matter how ugly it is, it's equally the self.
Well, Saul, are we moving out of self? Is that part of our evolution, is to be no self?
It's not, no. The evolution is to get to the place where you know firsthand is to know that the self is beautiful. It's to not get rid of the self. To hope that you're here for the next 20 lifetimes experiencing the self. Then, when you are friends with yourself, when you're delighted with it, when it's just, you can't wait to go into illusion the next day, then maybe the self will go, well, I guess I'm just going to leave then. Because there's nothing to do here. I can't get this arise out of this guy or this woman. I can't get him angry. I can't get him to be pissed off. Can't get him to react to anything. He doesn't seem to have any more belief systems or concepts the way things should be. This is really boring. I guess I'll just go. Mm-hmm. And the self is its own entity. It just leaves when it wants to leave. It's not like the divine comes in and goes, we're taking over, goodbye self. No, no, no. That's another spiritual game that we hear in these books. No, the ego remains until the ego decides it's going to go. But the ego's in control. The ego runs the entire thing. It is the divine does not run anything. Divine is the nothingness, the emptiness that's beyond all this. It has no say because it doesn't care. It's happy the way things are. It's not trying to get rid of anything. It's not going, we're going to get rid of the ego so there can be better stuff on this earth. The divine doesn't go, well, I'm going to judge the ego, and we're going to work on this so we can get rid of the ego, and then the divine will take over the earth. That's insane. That's like war. The divine is happy with everything exactly as it is, with no changes. World War 3, 4, 10 doesn't matter to the ego, I mean to the divine. That is still the ego that you think wants to change everything.
Because we're always looking at progress, aren't we? We're always looking for progress.
Yeah, and that's just the part of the illusion. Mm-hmm. It's part of the dream. When you are free of your concepts and beliefs, you're out of the dream. There is no more dream. You're just here. It doesn't mean that you don't see that there's a chair or a table or a person in front of you. But you're not pretending that that is separate, that that's outside of who you are. Like, you know that it's all you, but not experientially like people think, where they have this feeling of, oh my God, that table is me. No, that's still an experience that the ego feels. So that's not oneness.
Hmm.
Oneness is an ordinary state where you just know that you're not separate from the table. To describe this to you is like, it's impossible. It's just so ordinary. There's no more bliss. Bliss is a waste of time. It's boring.
I think a lot of us would like to live in there for a while, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like not knowing anything.
Hmm.
That's your true home. That's more blissful and wonderful than all the bliss and good feelings and tantra that you could ever think of. If I gave you $1 trillion, it wouldn't equal one moment of realizing you don't know anything. Because that place is so sweet. It's so innocent. It's like looking into a baby's eyes, but your eyes are the baby's eyes. And you're just sitting there and just going, oh, I don't know anything. And if you don't know anything, then you don't want anything because you don't know what there is to want. You don't know, there's no reactivity because you don't even know what it means to be reactive. You don't even know that somebody's hurting you. The only reason that somebody would think that somebody else is hurting them, being a victim, is because they think they know what's going on. But if you're experiencing a feeling, it doesn't matter what the feeling is, you're in the illusion. Because once you tell the truth of what that feeling truly is, it just turns to nothing. It dissolves in your mind. That part of the perception just goes.
So you're talking about, for example, letting someone be right instead of having dissension or having an argument or something. That's to dissolve, that lets the feeling dissolve or the tension?
Yeah, well, let's take it a little deeper. You look at somebody who's trying to be right, right?
Yep.
First thing you recognize is that you want to be right.
Okay.
So you're just like that person.
Right.
So you take away the comparison mode of being better than the person. The second thing is you look and you go, oh, they want to be right, and you realize that you and they don't know what they even want to be right about. They're just making up a story. And you feel compassion for yourself where you just want to make up a story. Then you realize that they're having a feeling of wanting to be right. But do you know that that's a feeling of wanting to be right? It might be just excitement that they see something and they feel really excited by it and they want to share it with everybody. They're frustrated that nobody wants to listen. And then you go, well, that sounds like a little child wanting attention to look at their little toy train. Then you go, oh, right is beautiful. And then you look at them, then you go, oh, I want to be wrong. I want to be right. And you go, well, that's pretty funny too. I guess I have my own toy train. And you keep taking it in and out until you realize you don't know what's going on. All the feelings that are connected inside that person and you, like you're reactive to them being right. Do you know that reactivity is true? Do you know it's reactivity? Maybe it's you're feeling what they're feeling. Maybe you're feeling something that somebody else said when you were a child. Maybe what you're feeling is compassion, but you think it's anger. You go, well, how can I mix those up? How do you know that you can't? You don't know what you're feeling. Every interpretation of every feeling that you have is completely false. I mean, 100% false.
So what do we do? Just sit with it until we get deeper? Or what do we do to assess it?
Well, you sit with the anger.
Mm-hmm.
You look at it. You think it's anger. And you keep questioning, is this anger? and you look at all your agreements with everybody in the earth that says this is anger, and you go, well, I don't know it's anger. That should do it alone. Because you're breaking all the agreements with everybody on the earth.
Hmm.
See, the first thing you do is you break all your agreements with everyone.
Hmm.
The agreement that men and women are different. The agreement that white people look different than black. According to who? Your perception? That black and white are different textures or something? Frequencies? All the ideas. That sadness and anger are bad. According to who? Where's the agreement that you made when you were a child with who that said that sadness is bad? And, you know, who says that weakness should be avoided and strength should be wanted? I personally think weakness is wonderful. I think losing weakness, arrogance, meanness, coldness, hardness, viciousness, jealousy, vengeance are all beautiful. But if you have an idea that says they're not, you have to sit and inquire with every little tiny speck of it until you tell the truth that you've been lying all this time. And that is one of the most important
things. Is it lying or is it just not knowing? I mean, is it?
No, it's lying. You have to be harsh with yourself.
Okay.
Not harsh where you beat yourself up, but you have to be really stern with yourself. It's a lie. I mean, what did Jesus say? He said, the truth will set you free. He didn't say yoga. He didn't say meditation. He didn't say anything will set you free except the truth. Well, if you're not telling the truth, then you're lying. This is not about being politically correct and sounding positive. There's no positive or negative involved in this. It's just being really ordinary and going, you know what, I'm lying. Without being harsh on yourself, without going into a sewer of self, you know, flagellation, without complaining, without blaming anybody, just going, you know what, I'm a liar. I'm a sneaky liar and a cheat. And that's all I've ever done. And you keep seeing that until it becomes ordinary, like saying, can you please put the light on, or tying your shoe.
Hmm.
There would be no more difference between those. Like, as I say these things, I'm a mean, womanizing, arrogant, cold man. Like, I feel no contraction, no place of shame where, oh, that's really bad. Like, I don't feel any of that.
So you think that's the way we assess ourselves and what we're doing is the contraction and the shame?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We contract inside and feel guilty and feel like there's something wrong with us. But there is something wrong with us. But that's not wrong. You see, you agree with that. Whenever the mind goes, there's something wrong with me, mm-hmm. agree with it. Go, okay, there's something wrong with me. Stop fighting the ego. Just that alone will shift your life completely. Just agree with the ego. Let the ego have control. Let the ego tell you're a piece of crap. Let the ego say you have never been a kind person. You'll never make it. You'll never make any money. You'll never have any joy in your life. Let the ego have its word.
Hmm.
Let it have the last word. And you sit there, you surrender to the ego. You let it beat you up. You let it smack you around. You let it win. Mm. That's the place way back when we were talking about helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
Be helpless with the ego. Let the ego be that winning, you know, mean thing. Let it be anything you want. And still be tender with it. Look at the ego yelling at you, screaming at you, telling you you're a piece of crap, and hold it in your arms and go, thank you.
Hmm.
It's true. Thank you.
And this, Solomon, I'm going to be cheeky now. So this is a route to manifestation. After that, we learn to say please, and we get a different life.
You get whatever. You won't even care.
Really.
You won't even care if you were given, you know, everything you've ever thought you wanted. It won't matter to you. Please just becomes a toy.
Hmm.
Unless people need to receive something and they're not choosing. Sometimes you ask please and they, you know, and you give it to others. But sometimes you don't. Sometimes selfishness is beautiful too. It's all the same, so you don't have a hierarchy of good things, bad things you say please for.
So when you step through all these levels of consciousness, how is your life? What's your life like? How do you feel? Do you have
do whatever
feelings?
You want to do. Everything you thought you shouldn't do, you mm-hmm. do. You eat sugar. You go out and McDonald's. You play video games. You watch too much television. You do everything you think that is not pure to do. And you just have a great time laughing at how silly everything is that you thought you should have been a holy person. You do whatever comes to you in the moment. You don't think about whether it's good or bad. You don't judge anything that you would do. If you want to run, you know, chase women and do whatever, there is no more judgment. There is no more thinking that this is the right thing and this is the wrong thing.
Hmm. So no duality, you know, at all.
No duality at all. None.
So what's the soul?
So if you look at
soul?
Children who play video games, right,
mm-hmm.
and you judge them and you say this is bad for society, well, why? Drugs are bad for society. Why? Drinking is bad. Why? What's bad about all these things? They're all beautiful. They all, if people didn't drink around the world, we would have killed each other. We need to, you know, medicate each other. We need all these drugs and these pharmaceutical companies to drug us so we don't kill ourselves and each other, so we don't blow the planet up.
You are a character.
Drugs are a gift. We need atom bombs all over the place so they scare everybody into staying cool and not ruffling each other's feathers.
Well, can't we move beyond that? We are one. I mean, goodness.
We can't. Because this is not a time for enlightenment. That's happening thousands of years from now. This is a time of just starting to learn to say thank you. We're going to spend the next 1,000 years learning thank you.
Hmm.
That's it.
Hmm.
We are a young, insane planet. This is the planet called Terra. Some people call it Earth. It's Terra. And that's another word for terror. We are in terror. We are a young planet. All the aliens and all those things that we like to look into, they're just looking at us waiting for us to grow up. They're not going to come here very soon because they don't want to contribute us killing ourselves. We're completely insane.
Unfortunately, we have to end this, but I'll tell you, we haven't run out of thoughts and ideas and enjoyment and experience with you. So tell everybody.
Not even close.
Well, maybe you'll come back again, will you?
I hope so.
Me too. What's your website?
It's a great time here. I'm having a great time. Hope you are.
I'm having a wonderful time.
I love it here. Why would I want to leave? I hope I get another 100 lifetimes. You know, every moment is, if you knew, though, that you're not going to come back, and I have experiences sometimes that I'm not, but if you knew that, all you would feel is this preciousness of every moment that you do have.
So either way that works, right?
Yes. But if you have a thought that I'm not coming back, then you're coming back.
Well, actually, I was thinking on a simpler level you'd come back on Paradigm Shifters one day.
I might. I might be in the audience and you're speaking.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see what... Tell people how to get hold of you, Solomon.
Oh, okay. It's the end? Oh, my God. I'm at 530-852-7836. And you can call me after 12. I love to sleep late. So after 12 noon,
East,
and you can call
East Coast
me
time.
Into the night. I don't care. Till 3 in the morning. I don't care. And I'll talk to you.
Oh.
And I do work one-on-one with people, and I will come to your town and speak to you as groups. And I'm a lot of fun.
Yes, you are.
And I'll make your life completely crazy. I hope to do that.
And your website is thetruthunfolding.com, right?
Yes, thetruthunfolding.com.
Well, I've so enjoyed and appreciated your wisdom, your insights, and your selfness. If that's
Thank
the
you.
Right word.
A big kiss on your nose and everybody in the audience that's listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Solomon. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters. And if you have any feedback on Solomon and his probably a little bit controversial approach to awakening, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and I hope you did too, email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. If you have suggestions or other guests, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. And thank you again for listening. Good night and many blessings.